Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 102-year-old William Sanchez of Monterey Park, California. He was serving with the 59th Coast Artillery on Corregidor when it fell to the Japanese on May 6, 1942. In holding off the enemy there for 5 months after the attacks that brought America into the war, those undersupplied but courageous American forces bought enough time for the U.S. to regroup with a new base of operations in Australia. That would prove pretty important through the rest of the war, but it all came at a heavy cost. Like the thousands who survived the Bataan Death March a month earlier, those captured on Corregidor would spend the next 3+ years in captivity. Do you remember, Mr. Sanchez, what that felt like when you heard that the general had reluctantly ordered all 11,000 troops on Corregidor, all the Filipinos and all the Americans like you, to surrender?
Well, you can't forget that. You knew you were going to lose your freedom, so it was a hard thing to accept.
Did you ever think you were going to lose your life?
Yes, all the time. At any time, you figured this might be your last moment.
And when that surrender happened, you probably had no idea what to expect from the Japanese, right?
Right. We had no idea what was going to happen to us.
What did happen to you? What was the first thing they had you do?
Most of it was bad treatment and things that you don't really expect, but you have to endure.
And you were still a very young man.
I was a very young kid, yes.
You're in your early 20s. At this point, you're 23. Do you think that some of what you'd already endured in your life prepared you to handle that?
Yes. It was a good experience to be able to handle what was coming.
Mm.
And you don't wish it on other people.
So now you're a prisoner.
Yes.
And you have no idea how long you're going to be a prisoner.
That's the worst part.
So how did you face that? What gave you the strength or the hope to endure, to persist, to persevere?
Well, you never lose hope. You always think something better is going to happen. And you go on that basis. Things can't get worse.
But for you, as I understand your story, after you're a prisoner, they did get worse. The Japanese gave you a real brutal task.
The Japanese were real bad. It's something we had to learn to endure.
And they made you pile up all the bodies of the Americans and Filipinos who've been killed there?
Yes. They made us take care of all the bodies and everything, and we thought it would never end.
And then what did they do with those bodies that they forced you to gather?
Oh, they just piled them up, carted them up, and set fire to it. They weren't very kind. And all in all, it was a very bad experience. But it was something that had to be endured.
And so this is 1942, and as I said, you didn't know how long, but it was going to be a long time until you tasted freedom again.
Yes. It was a very difficult time at the time.
Can you help us understand what life in captivity was like and what some of the things you had to face and endure were?
It is very difficult to try to explain what we endured. It's unbelievable, but it happened.
Is it okay if I ask you a few questions about some of it?
Yes.
And I realize that this is something you had to survive one day at a time for more than 3 years.
You never knew what was going to happen the next day. From day to day, you learned to live life.
Were there some people that you were with that helped you?
We all helped each other. There was many bad things we had to learn to endure. And we all helped each other.
You know, one thing that I think most people listening can identify with or maybe can get a frame of reference from, since we all have to eat to survive, maybe people would be interested to hear what your menu consisted of as a prisoner of war.
Leftovers. What they didn't eat, they would feed us.
Is it fair to say that you ended up eating some things you never thought you'd eat?
That is true. It was a rough time in life that you don't even like to think about.
And we talked about you being a boxer, a good enough boxer that the Bruins wanted to give you a scholarship for it.
That's right.
So you're in pretty good physical shape before this happens.
Very good shape.
Uh-huh.
But that dwindled fast.
Yeah. So how much do you think you weighed before the war?
Oh, maybe 135 pounds or something. And we were down to about 100.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult life overall and the way things happened.
And, you know, people today, some of the reference points they have to this experience, maybe one of the most well-known would be your friend Louis Zamperini, and they've seen the movie Unbroken, or they've read that book by Laura Hillenbrand.
Yes.
Or read Louis' book.
Louis Zamperini happened to be in my camp,
mm-hmm.
so I knew real well what he wrote about.
So when he wrote about being tortured?
Yes.
You experienced similar things?
Well, life itself was a torture, and it's just something you had to learn to endure.
How often did you think about your brother or your sister or your cousins, your family back here?
Quite often you think of what life is like to be with your family, yes.
I've had a lot of ex-prisoners of war give me different perspectives on some of the things they did in captivity to focus their minds or to remain hopeful. Some guys would daydream about all the things they were going to eat when they got out or the business they were going to start.
You always think about that, what you're going to eat when you get out. That's the primary thought.
So what was that for you? Was there something you were really looking forward to?
No, I just learned to accept things as they were and hope for something better.
I don't ask this to be salacious or melodramatic or anything like that, but just so we understand what it was really like. What were some of the most challenging things or circumstances that your Japanese captors made you endure?
Well, first, we didn't eat enough. We were always hungry. So they knew how what our limit were and everything, and things were difficult. It's hard to accept some of the things we had to endure.
And I'm sure it was different at different times in different camps, but could you give us an example of like what a daily ration might be that they gave you to eat or drink?
It would vary. Sometimes we would eat good, sometimes we wouldn't eat at all. So it would vary. It's nothing that would be steady. You just learn to accept things as they are for the moment.
And as far as the Japanese, were there some who treated you better than others?
Well, there's always one or two that are different than the others, but overall, you don't get much help.
Were there some things that happened during your time as a prisoner that might have been mundane in normal life, but meant a lot to you given the circumstances?
Well, you learn to take it on a day-by-day basis because you can never do any planning or anything. It's a day-to-day thing.
And what were some of the things that the Japanese required you to do?
Whenever they could, they'd put us to work, and we would have to do labor and things that we were not accustomed of doing.
And I imagine if you're not eating much, you don't have much strength either.
Your energy level is very low, so you just do the best you can.
And how would they react if one of you was unable to do what they asked you to do?
They would do many unpleasant things that would make it difficult you to enjoy life as a whole. It's a difficult life all around. Just to survive was important, so that's what you thought of the most. How am I going to survive all this?
Well, and I guess that's the biggest question. As we look to your example and we marvel at the fact that you're still here and still able to tell this story, the biggest question is, how did you survive? How'd you do it?
It's a mind over matter thing. You have to think positive that eventually it's going to end.
We mentioned Louis Zamperini, and if people have read his book, they know about the deal he made with God when he was floating on the raft.
Yeah, I was in the same camp with Louis Zamperini. So I knew most of his thinking because he would talk about things. It was just a bad situation overall.
Had you known who he was because of his track days at USC?
Oh, yes, I knew who he was, and I was real close to him. We were just in a bad situation overall, and it was something we could not control.
And people who have read his book or seen the movie, one of the characters, there was a real-life character that they'll never forget after digesting that, was a guy he called the Bird. I think you had another nickname for him,
well,
right?
Well, the Bird was the disciplinary officer, and he was in charge of discipline on all the prisoners.
And you called him the Wily Bird?
That's what we named him, the Wily Bird.
Watanabe was his name.
He would always come up with things that were not too pleasant.
We got the sense from Louis' stories, and I had him on this program sharing his story, that the Bird almost seemed to enjoy picking on you American prisoners.
He preferred the American rather than the British and the other prisoners they had because they felt they were overwhelmed by the Americans.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just using that as a reference point because I know what Louis said about him, that he became the kind of figure that a lot of you prisoners would fear or would try to avoid if you could.
Well, you always tried to avoid the Japanese, especially the disciplinary officers. They were brutal.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can give us an example of that, of how they carried out that discipline.
Well, they wouldn't feed you if they felt they didn't had to, and it's just things that you don't expect. You expect a decent thing, and they do the reverse.
There's a well-known example that Louis told that is depicted in the film Unbroken, which you got to go to the premiere for with your son as a special guest. There's a scene in that film where they show Louis holding a railroad tie.
Yeah.
Did that really happen?
It actually happened. Yes, it did.
And is that something you were subjected to also?
Yes. We were all subjected to something of a kind. There was no exceptions.
And anybody who's seen that, just seen it depicted on film when it's not even really real, they can imagine and try to run through in their mind, how would I handle that? How would I try to survive that?
Yes, it is very difficult to imagine things that happen that are actually happening. You just learn to endure them. And that's the way that things would go.
If you've never seen the film Unbroken, this weekend would be a great time to watch it for the first time. You'll see some of what you've been hearing about. And if you'd like to hear Mr. Sanchez's late friend, Louis Zamperini, when he shared his story on this program, we have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. It's break time again, but when we come back, what it felt like for this ex-prisoner of war to finally taste freedom again. We're also going to hear some perspective from his son, who journeyed back to Japan with him to see some of the places where his father endured such hardships. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example principle of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.